did I tell you that when I left this place, it was an alfalfa field?
No, I don't think you did.
Well, anyway, the alfalfa stood about that high. Oh, it is the most beautiful crop of alfalfa anybody ever saw. It's some special kind. It isn't the ordinary alfalfa. And you know, I've offered to give roots of it to any farmer who wanted to start it.
Nobody wanted it?
Well, they don't believe that it's a different kind. One man said, well, that's ridiculous. There is only one kind of alfalfa. Mm-hmm. That isn't true. There are, I don't know, but there are at least two kinds and probably more.
Is this a particularly tall or bushy kind of alfalfa?
This was so especially vigorous. When I had the place plowed, my father put a beautiful, great big work team.
Horses?
His horses were beautiful, great big heavy ones, well taken care of. And I love horses. And he found roots just as big as that.
As big as his arm?
My arm. And his plow couldn't cut through them. That big team couldn't pull a plow through them.
How big of a plow did he use?
Hmm?
How big a plow did he use?
A plow? He had a two-bottom plow. It was a regular big farm plow. But those roots were really something he had to take an axe to them. But
did you save any of the alfalfa? Did you save any of the alfalfa?
I have a little bit of it on the place yet. I keep some dried alfalfa to make alfalfa tea. Do you ever drink any?
Uh-huh. Good. It's really good.
It's not really good, but it's good for us. If people would make a practice of drinking it, they'd probably say, I love it, Dr. Bills. And oh, by the way, did you hear on the radio just a little while ago, Paul Harvey tell about Julie Eisenhower's bill for her hospital rooms would be? It was something above $2,000 for 5 days, just for the rooms.
Really?
Mm-hmm. It didn't take in anything but room rent. Well,
it
how
sure
could that be?
It sure must have been different when...
Well, I presume it was a suite. It probably had her room, and a room for him, and a room for her mother, and a sitting room, and, of course, one or two bathrooms, and then Julie's room.
Were you ever in the hospital here, back?
I've been in the hospital here twice.
Would you know what it cost way back in 1925 or so?
Not that long ago, but in, I think, 40-something. I'm sure it was 40-something. It was $18. That is, that's what I paid. And I was there just one night and part of the day.
That was still a lot, even then.
Well, I staged an insurrection that I was going home. And the nurse said, no, I couldn't. And I told her, well, I was going. And she tried to... She had waked me up the night before to give me a sleep hypo. Yeah, we did that right along. They wouldn't get to it when a person was asleep, they'd make it up and give it. And I told her I would not take it. The doctor ordered it. I said, I don't care who ordered it. Well, I said, if you try to put that needle into me, I'm going to break it. So she didn't try it.
And she let you go home.
I just wouldn't have anything the way they wanted it. And so when I told her that I was going home, whether the doctors charged me or not, I was going home. And she said, well, I'll call the doctor. I went in her room quick and shut the door. I knew what she wanted to tell the doctor, and she'd be afraid to tell him for me, so I shut my door tight. And after a while, I went out, and she said, well, the doctor said I could go. They were just so glad to get rid of me. I paid $18 for that minute. Now, if I had been there 24 hours, I don't know what it would have been anymore or not. That was in the 40s, and I'm quite sure that it was much less than that before that.
Well, in the Depression, I was going to ask you what it was like in the Depression here in Moscow.
Oh, it was a sad and doleful time, like the Depression always is, with the people all frightened and afraid of everybody and everything, and just full of fright, everybody. They always already were in the Depression. People now are badly scared. But I would take a $5 bill, which was quite a lot of money at that time, and I would go down and I would pay them water and the light and the phone, and get groceries with what was left.
Mm. Were you working at the time? Was it hard to get work?
It was awfully hard to get anything to do. Awfully hard. Just almost impossible to get anything to do. I got a loan now and then, and I had a little saved up to start on. Else I guess we'd have starved.
Do you think that panic had to do with why Moscow was so unfriendly? You had said that Moscow was an unfriendly town.
Well, I presume so. I presume so, but still, at that time, there were not many people trying to settle here. The students would come in, but I'd been here a long time before I ever heard of a married student. This house right here was lodging and meals for boy students. And there were a great many places all over the town where the students could stay. And then later, they refused to allow the students to live anywhere except on the campus. Well, there was a reason for that. The one who owned the mortgages on the buildings wanted her payment.
On the university buildings?
They had Hayes Hall, but not for me. They built for me while I was here. I think I've been here a few years. I'm sure I have. Yes, I've been here some years before they built for me. And they had that men's hall. What's the name of it? I hadn't thought of it for ages.
I don't know.
Well, anyway, there was Hayes and the men's hall. And some years later, they got the buildings from a federal army camp. I think that was a grizzly. I think that's where it was. Maybe not, but anyway, not far. There was an army camp. And their buildings were just Well, just a long building, just one room wide, and just lightly put up. And I don't believe they were on foundations. But anyway, the university got some of those. And as late as when I went to university, when I was 82, they were still using one of those for a classroom right back of the ad. They sure were even then. But they used one for two for men students. Over on Sixth Mill, I think one of them was, but in there somewhere, far down on Sixth, that is as far down then.
You said a woman held the mortgage to the buildings on the university?
They had those two buildings there around and fitted them up for student residence.
Who was she? Who was the woman who held the mortgage?
Oh, never mind.
Oh.
Never mind who she was. But anyway, she had the mortgage. Naturally, she wanted
her.
There was one student who went to register, and they said, "Where do you live?" Well, for his freshman year, he and two other boys had found a cabin up here somewhere, kind of on the edge of town, that had been vacated, and so they moved in. And nobody cared. Didn't make any difference because it just stood there empty. And they got a few dry goods boxes and a table and a stove, lived in there, the three of them. And so when she asked this boy, they asked him when he was registering, where he lived, he gave his address up there. And they said, "No, we can't register you unless you're on the campus." Well, he said he lived there last year, it was all right. "Yes, but we can't register you this year unless you live on the campus." Well, these mortgages have just been made.
Mm.
And they argued and argued with him. And finally, he just simply said, "I lived there last year and went to university, and I'm going to live there this year and go to university," and walked out. So a couple of days later he went back and they said, "Well, we found that a special order had been made that you could live there." So he lived there. I guess he lived there until he graduated, for anything I know. But I'm surprised that they were still using that surplus building when I had class in that building.
You had said again that Moscow was an unfriendly place.
Well, it was self-contained.
Oh.
And it had no wish to be other than self-contained. Of course, like any other place, we had more or less foreign population. Well, a foreign population is perfectly willing to have the town stay as it is or grow or whatever if it doesn't bother them. They don't understand what it's all about. What they know is their country. So they were no help one way or another. They were just here and that's all.
What kind of people?
I don't know so much about, there weren't so many of the foreigners here, but there were some. And I remember back in, in the 50s, I guess it was, that foreign families came in here and settled, and the town took them up and made pets of them, and they would find a house that they could rent, and they would go in and semi-furnish it, to fill the refrigerator. They do everything for these foreign people. Now that was in the 50s.
What about back in the 20s? Were they still as friendly then?
They weren't that way. Well, I don't know of any of those families coming in when I was first here. I'd been here quite a long time before this began. I remember it so distinctly because every now and then I see in the paper the family name of one of these families. I can't recall it now. This man is a contractor, I think. Anyway, they just pushed right forward. I've got to be very independent and perhaps moderately well-to-do.
But you yourself found it unfriendly when you first got here.
Well, I remember this because the refrigerator had been filled for them, and the woman went to the refrigerator to get out something. And here was some bacon. Oh, pork. And she slammed the refrigerator, and she would not open it until someone else had taken the bacon out and taken it away. So I've always remembered about that.
But when you first got here, no one did that for you. When you first got here, the people were unfriendly in general.
They were not like they are now at all. They were self-contained and they wanted to stay so. I know about various instances. Well, they couldn't happen now, I imagine. They wouldn't. Because I don't know how many new business we've had come in the last 2 years, but I think it must be 15 or 18. They're just all over everywhere.
Well, at that time, was there much competition between businesses? Were there many different...
That you were supposed to trade at what was right here and nothing else. That was good enough for you. We had David's and Penny's. And there was a chain store came in from Lewiston. And they didn't stay long. They soon left. We had a Salvation Army family here, and they left, and we've never had one since. And an officer and his family. And we had an osteopath doctor, and when he died of old age, there were two women osteopaths who came in. There wasn't one place in this town that they could rent.
Just because they were from outside?
And the osteopath took counts against them. They went somewhere out and got a farmhouse. Well, people can't go out to a farmhouse to a doctor. They weren't here long. And by, there was a doctor. I don't know how he got in, but he did. And he was here to put a bullet through his head.
Because of the unfriendliness?
He killed himself right in his office. His wife had gone somewhere on a trip. And when she came back, he wasn't at home, so she went to the office, and there he was on the office floor.
Would you say that the old families of the town ran Moscow? What, did the old families of the town run Moscow?
I think they did. I think they did. You see, there was the David store. And there were the three David brothers beside the one in the east who went much higher than these three here did. Perhaps you've heard of him.
Mm-hmm.
Well, anyway, he was... it was with the Best Foods Corporation in New York City. I think he was president, chairman of the board or something, you know. And he went up like that. And it was mighty hard on the stores in the Depression. They weren't doing much business. There wasn't any money. People didn't know what it was. And it was hard on the stores as well as on the people. And they drove their teams into town in the early days. And at the foot of the 6th Street Hill, there was a water trough and a hitch rack after I came here. I think it was there a year after I came. It was on the 6th Street side of the federal grounds, right there by 6th Street. And this 7th Street was just a mud wall. And there was a wooden sidewalk down this part of the block. I don't remember whether it went clear down the block or what. Anyway, I know from this place here, down at the end of the block, it was a wooden sidewalk, and in one place it was this high from the ground.
Really?
And one day a car came along. I don't know how they drove as far as they did, but they drove so far that a wrecker couldn't get to them to pull them out in the mud.
Really?
And I know the man came up here to the door for me. I don't know why. I don't know whether he wanted to borrow a shovel or what it was, but I know he came to the door. And he said that they had inquired how to get to someone they were going to. And they told them, well, just keep going on 7th, and you'll come to it. Well, they kept going until they were right straight from here. They were in mud above the homes. It was terrible. And they paved it after I bought it.
Would you say that Moscow was a rough town?
No. No, Moscow was a very quiet, peaceable, clean town.
Mm.
It's true. They had their places where the men went. But they were kept quiet and as much as could be undercover.
Mm.
Made no pretense that they weren't there, but no advertising especially that they were there. They were just there as part of the town. One of them was upstairs in the building that used to be the one building. Oh dear. It was an office building. That is, there was this place and an apartment, and then on the other side there were offices. And the nurse and Dr. Strobel and the welfare, those three offices. I remember the building well enough because I was secretary of development for 2 years. So I know quite a bit about it.
Well, what about the sheriffs?
About what?
The sheriffs.
The sheriff?
The sheriffs. I mean, did they have a hard... They didn't have a hard time keeping things in order, or... The lawmen. Like you mentioned Sheriff Summerfield. Oh, you can't hear. Did the sheriffs, the police, did they have a hard, time keeping
the
law?
The only trouble they had was when Prohibition came in. They tried to keep the liquor out, but other than that, they didn't have so much to do, and I think we had only 3 police. I think there was just the chief and the day man and the night man. I think that's all we had. But they didn't have much to do. There were years after I came here that on a hot night, I put a cot right out there in the front yard and sleep right out there. And I was safer there on that cot than I am locked in right here.
So there wasn't much crime?
There was very little crime. There was very little of anything. They did have kind of a busy time during Prohibition trying to keep the liquor out. But there was no disturbance about it. They merely tried to get the liquor and destroy it. There was no disturbance about it at all. No fighting, no fists or guns or anything. It was just peaceful and quiet. And I felt perfectly safe out there. I guess I must have been.
Well, in Prohibition, were there many bootleggers?
There was quite a lot of liquor. It was during the Prohibition year. Our WCTU, 3 members of us, went over on the courthouse lawn and watched the sheriff destroy what he had on hand then. And he took the whole lot out onto the lawn and he enumerated it as he took it. 1 bottle of this, 6 bottles of this, 2 bottles of this. He enumerated everything and I believe he broke the bottles. He must have, I don't know what else. But anyway, that was his way of getting rid of it. And why he took it out on the lawn, because he may have been asked to, I don't know. But anyway, that's what he did. You'd think more likely he'd take it to the sink in the house. But he didn't. He took it out on the lawn, and we stood there and watched him. I had a picture of it for a long time. I wonder if I could have that picture anywhere now. I don't remember that I have. I'll look someday and see.
If you do find it, I'd love to see it.
Well, I'll look someday and see.
Oh, that's...
I don't remember having seen it for a long time. I wonder if there's anything in this drawer that would be interesting. I don't believe that would be. Before that was a hospital, it was a hotel, and he took it and turned it into a hospital.
The old Gritman Memorial Hospital?
The Gritman Memorial Hospital was a hotel, and they just had the hotel part for years after I came, before they built on anything at all. And I guess they're still building for anything I know, but they just had the old original hotel.
Was it both the hospital and the hotel at the same time?
What's that?
Was it both the hospital and a hotel at the same time?
No.
He bought the hotel?
He bought it and remade it into a hospital.
Was that the first hospital that Moscow had?
No, we had another one down by the P's down there, you know, by those seed houses way down here in the corner. There was a doctor who had the hospital there. I presume he didn't have more than 4 or 5 rooms. And his wife was a nurse, and the two of them ran the place.
That must have been awfully small for the whole town.
It was sufficient. We didn't go to the hospital then because we got sick. We went to bed and drank licorice tea or something and got a... Troy, and when I had the Troy news, he came into the office one day, just to visit, and he told me how Troy was settled, how it came to be done. He said that he and his brother settled there, and he said, you know, we're Swede, and of course we planted rutabagas. He said we had a nice big field of them, and he said some folks came along one day on a prairie schooner, and they saw those rutabagas, and they had to stop and eat a rutabaga. And it was such a nice place, and the rutabagas were so good, they just simply settled right there. And other people in schooners came by, and it was the same story. And those rutabagas settled Troy.
Did he tell you how Troy got its name?
His name, I'm sure, was Olson. There were two other brothers who homesteaded adjoining land, and they built their house, their cabin, right on the line, half of it on one side and half on the other. And the one who had the land here outfitted his half of it with a stove and cupboard and chair and everything. And the other one did the same over here in his half. Each one lived on his own land. Well, there is a law that it has to be so far from the line. But they were right on the line and nobody cared and nobody said anything about it. And they proved up that way. And I think it was either while I was at Troy or shortly before that. I know that people told me about it. Maybe it was just before I went there. The people bought 2 easy chairs and took them out and gave them to these 2 brothers. They still had just their old kitchen chairs, all they had. But they bought 2 easy chairs just alike for the 2 brothers, gave them to them. But it just amused him telling about, that was the way Troy settled on those rutabagas.
Did you ever hear how Troy got its name?
No, I think, I don't know. I just don't know if I did.
When you first got to Troy, did you start working on the paper right away? When you first got to Troy, did you start to work on the Troy News right away?
No, I didn't. No, I rented a house farther down on Main Street and on the far side of it. And Ethel and I lived there for a while. And the young women who were employed in Troy, there was Anna Michaelis from the Michaelis store, and Beth Mills from York. These names of the people in Troy.
Sure.
Anna Michaelmas. Beth Mills from Seattle was teaching.
She was teaching in the...
in the school, in the high school. And a girl by the name of Mabel something, I don't know what that name was, from Lewiston, was teaching in the grid school. I'm trying to think of that other high school teacher's name. Perhaps I will have gone by.
Oh, it's not important.
She was one of the most favorite teachers Ethel ever had anywhere. Mm.
It's not important.
The name is still here in Moscow. She was from Moscow. But anyway, the young women there got together and rented a house and lived there. And after a while, I went to keep house for them. I guess I found they couldn't keep house themselves. So I went to keep house for them. And we had a storeroom upstairs. They had cleared up bedrooms enough, you know, for themselves. But this room, they piled everything they didn't want anywhere else. And that was all there was left. And Ethel and I had that room and the bed in it. And, well, we had no home. So I got a man who had a cook car for his thrashing to bring his cook car up into the backyard. And Ethel and I lived out there, and I kept house for them and worked half days in the print shop. That was when I began working in the print shop.
Mm-hmm.
And when I had been with the girls quite a while ago. I'm trying to think how long that I've been with them. Been with them a while. Oh, I know. School was out, which took the teachers away, and left Anna and one other Troy girl, and they wouldn't keep the house, you know, just for the two girls. So they had broken up at the house, and I had gone back into this house I had rented. And it was in Ethel's senior year that one day Mr. Johns, Wilbur Johns, said to me as we were working at the worktop, "Would you like to buy this place?" And I said, "Yes, I would." He said, "Well, let's go over to the bank and make out the papers." So we went right over to the bank and made out the papers. I had the print shop. And he was marrying a rich widow from back home in Montana. So he was anxious to get rid of his paper.
He was.
I presume he had been trying otherwise to get rid of it and hadn't. But anyway, I just took it right to what he said. I don't remember what it was, but anyway, we made out the papers. I went to the print shop, and we were there. I don't know how long, but we were there some months through the winter, because I remember shoveling the sidewalk.
Hmm.
I got rid of it just before Guthrie graduated. Just before. We had planned that I would go on with the print shop and get a car, and she would drive to university in weather that she could, and otherwise she could live in the home. And I would go on with the print shop. But I had a chance to sell it for more than it was worth. And by the way, that big press there was said to be the one that Mark Twain brought across the country with him.
Really?
Don't miss that.
I'm getting it on the tape.
The big press in Troy was said to be the one that Mark Twain brought across the country with him. And I said, I knew better. He would not bring anything as worthless as that. But it may be that it was the one. It was a whole press. And that was the same one that about that time the Spokesman Review was put out on a whole press. How long they kept their whole press, I don't know, but I know about that time, that's what they were using, was a whole press. But I'm sure it was a later model than mine was. And the whole works was pretty well given out when I bought it. Of course, Mr. Johns didn't tell me all of it. He did tell me one thing that I'd have to put in new. But it was getting pretty well dilapidated, all of it. But anyway, I put the paper out, and one day I couldn't get the paper out because the press wouldn't turn.
Oh.
Well, I didn't know what to do with it, and someone said, well, you get Olson. He says, he knows how to fix anything. I think he did. He came over and brought another fellow with him.
Which Olson was the?
I think it was Carl Olson. But this had been a long time ago, you know, back in the 30s. And he brought this man with him, and Carl looked at the press a little while, and he said to this man with him, he says, turn it. Well, the man took hold of the handle and gave the wheel a little turn. No, the other way, the other way. So he turned it the other way. And he says, yes. And he fixed something in there. I don't know what or how, but in a few minutes he had the press working. He'd never seen a press before. But this was to do this, and this was to do that, and they had to work together. Why couldn't anybody see what was in there? He was a marvel.
Did you turn it by hand? Did you turn it by hand?
Mm-hmm.
Did you do all the work yourself?
Well, I couldn't turn the press by hand, and I couldn't carry the chase. And instead of thinking to have a man carry the chase in there one time and leave it, and carry my type to it, I left it like Mr. Jones did, and every week I had a man go and carry it in. That chase was heavy. I don't know what, I suppose. Well, I suppose at least 100 pounds, but it was really heavy. You see, it was metal, and the type is lead. The chase is about that big square, full of type. So it had a right to be heavy.
How many pages was the paper?
I bought what is called patent paper. That is to say, from a company in Seattle, I got ready printed pages, and I think there were 2 blank pages for me. And I used one. I believe one side was blank and one was printed. But anyway, there was blank for me. And Mr. Johns had pointed out some boilerplate, and he said, you're going to need this to fill up when you don't have anything to put in. I thought, well, I wonder now. But I didn't say anything. And in a very short time, I was using a supplement twice the size of this box, because I had more than I could put on the blank that he had been using. And he'd been using boilerplate.
You mean the Seattle people sent you news already printed?
People brought me news, and I got around town and found it. I went all over town, all the time.
Did you have anyone else news hunting for you?
Well, there were Ethel and myself in town, and I had at least one outside correspondent, and I don't remember who that was. But I had at least one outside one, and I think only one. I think that was on Bear Ridge. And while I had the paper, out there, I think it was on Bear Ridge, somewhere out there anyway, there was a daughter who was away from home somewhere, I think taking a nurse's course. Anyway, she was in some kind of school. And suddenly she died. And they brought her home. And they kept the body out there at home for a week before they had the funeral. And I asked why. And they said that her parents said that she hadn't been home for a year. She'd been gone so long. Now they had her, they were going to keep her a while. So they kept her a week before they had the funeral.
Well, what else made news?
Well, there was one piece of news that I didn't print because I wasn't too sure whether I should or not. You know, it's kind of bad if you print something you shouldn't. You can get into a peck of trouble. Oh, who is that woman in Troy who used to teach 8th grade? What is her name? Well, you ask anybody in Troy who that famous teacher was that taught the 8th grade.
Oh, Anna Marie?
Hmm?
Anna Marie?
Yes, Anna Marie. Anna Marie sent it to me. If I remember right, she hadn't signed her name to it. But anyway, she sent me this written bit of news that she and a neighbor woman had found their herd of calves bloated. And the two of them got out the big truck with the rack on it and put the calves in the truck and drove the truck over fresh plowed ground, back and forth, over that. And they got the calves all over their boat. Did you ever hear that from boat?
No.
Well, it worked. You better put that in for Anna Marie.
Amazing. But you didn't know if you should print that or not.
Well, I didn't know, because it was so unusual, and, well, I was new at being an editor. I'd never been an editor before. I had sent in news on papers, and I'd had a column in the Dakota Farmer one time, but I'd never seen anything like that. I can tell you something else that's awfully good for bloat. That was way back when I was living with grandfather and grandmother. And old Kate, the only horse that grandmother could drive, she couldn't drive at all. She'd sit in the buggy and hold the lines. And that's all she could do about it. And this was the only horse that she could have in the shaft. And old Kate came up to the gate and lay down to die. And Uncle Will tried everything he could to do for her, and he couldn't do anything for her, and he couldn't get her on her feet. And he said, well, she's going to die, I'm going to town. So he pulled out And grandmother was in the garden, it would be for hours, and grandfather was asleep and would be for quite a while. So I built up the kitchen fire, which wasn't out yet, after breakfast. And when the plates you lift, you know, had gotten about so hot, I took two of them off and put one in each end of a grain sack and tied the sack together in the middle and took that out to this old mare lying there just almost dead and awfully bloated. And I put them so that one of these sacks came just as far as I could reach under her side, and the other one hung down over her stomach here. And she began groaning with relief at the heat of those plates. And this one, got to burning right through the hide. And she made a terrific effort and got on her feet, and the gas began to just roll like a cyclone. And when Uncle Will came home, here she was up on the hill eating grass.
That's amazing.
Now, any farmer ought to know that.
Hot stove plates.
Mm-hmm. Or a hot stone or anything that's hot. If they had an electric hot pan, wouldn't matter what it was, if it was hot.
When you had the paper, did you carry national news?
No, only what was printed on the printed sheets. But I didn't carry anything outside of the Troy and vicinity.
Well, what did make news? What did make news in Troy?
Oh, that so-and-so had gone to Spokane on business, and somebody had had a couple of the women into tea last week, and that somebody was excelling in school, and that the teacher in Lewiston had gone home. That she had gone home for the weekend, or that her father had been there to visit her, which he was. She got down sick one morning and wouldn't get up and go to school. And she phoned to her folks, and her father came right up to see her. Anything like that, you know.
Was there any big news in Troy?
Big news? Well, there was the case of the illegitimate baby. And they tried to get a certain young man in Troy to marry the girl, and he would not. So they had him arrested. And in a sort of a pre-trial, he proved with witnesses that the girl had been drunk in public. Well, if a girl is drunk in public, she has no recourse at all. Mm. There's nothing she can say that will stand. Mm. So he was discharged. The case was dropped. And his father and his sister, I can't think what they were doing. Maybe they had a store, but anyway, they were just down the street from me. And I went in to see them, and I asked them what I should do about that. And the sister said, well, of course, we'd rather you didn't say anything. I said, well, of course you would, but it's this way. I said, the Spokesman Review will carry it, and the Moscow paper will carry it, and people in Troy take both of those papers, and they'll say, well, what's the matter with the Troy News? Don't they hear the news? I said, I have to say something. I said, I have no intention of putting it on the front page with headlines, but I said, I have to say something. Well, I did say that so-and-so had been arrested and the trial was dropped or something like that. I just gave it very briefly over, among other news. Didn't feature it up at all. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what good it would have done if I had featured it up. Although it was a feature story. No question of that. but I didn't see any use making enemies of anybody. They wouldn't undo it. I don't know what became of the girl and the baby, but I know that she just stayed strictly in the house.
Were the townspeople then unfriendly to her?
Unfriendly?
Unfriendly to her.
I don't know that they were. I don't know that they were at all. I just didn't hear more about it. But as for being friendly, Troy is kind of home to me yet.
Really?
Right now. There was one morning, as I was on the street, I think I was starting up to where the girl, where I was keeping house for the girls. Anyway, I was on the street as the men were going to the brick plant. And every man who passed me stepped off of the sidewalk and lifted his hat. Now, wasn't that nice?
Really?
That was really an honor.
I had heard that Troy was kind of a rough town in those days.
Oh, no, there was nothing rough there. It was just, it was just as peaceful as this place is right now. There wasn't a ruffian in the town. Not one. And, who was the man that had that store next to it? Just second from the print shop. I knew the boy's name in a minute if I'd say it. But anyway, I remember particularly that he hung a leather coat outside as an advertisement, and day and night, for 1 week, that leather coat hung right there day and night.
And no one thought of taking it?
No. Nobody did anything of that kind. It was as peaceable as a Sunday morning in that country.
Were people mostly farmers?
They were foreign, did you say?
Farmers.
Farmers. The farmers didn't live in town much. George Smith lived in town, but he also had, I don't know whether he called it a hardware store, or whether he called it an appliance shop or what. But anyway, he had business on the street. And Mrs. George Smith, the last I knew, I think still is out in Paradise, Noah. She could tell you about Troy in the early days, Mrs. George Smith.
Well, what kind of social activities did Troy have?
What kind of
social?
Oh, I do not know now.
No, at the time.
Oh, at that time. Well, they, one of the churches had their circle meeting one day in the week, or once a month. And the other church had their circle a different day in the week, once a month.
What's a circle meeting?
There was a Methodist church and they, and the Christian church. The two churches and each of them had their circle meetings. And at the end of a school year, the school would have a little in the way of festivities. Not much, but a little. One big festive occasion was when the eighth graders would go out to get wild flowers for their graduation. And oh, there's an event. Reynold Shepherd, R-E-Y-N-O-L-D. He took the old Ford car and eighth grade youngsters piled into that Ford sedan. Well, at that time a Ford sedan wasn't much. But anyway, eight of them got in there, and Reynold was driving. He was an eighth grader himself. And as he came to the underpass of the railroad, instead of going through the underpass full clip, he ran into one of the posts. And here were eight youngsters spread all over the landscape. And Michaelmas is the name I'm trying to think of. None of them were seriously hurt except a Michaelmas boy. And he received a head injury that was very critical. And they brought him immediately to the hospital in Moscow. And he just barely lived for two or three days, and then he began to recover. And I guess he completely recovered. For anything I know, he is one of the Michaelmasters that has the store here in Moscow now. He might easily be. I don't know. But anyway, he was critically hurt. And the others were scratched and bruised. And they appeared on the platform with a bandage on their head, and plastic on their cheek, and an arm bound up, all kinds of ways. And Anna Marie got up and she looked at them and she said, "This is not a sad occasion, it is a happy one." Well, she was happy that seven of them were there.
Where did they go to get the wildflowers?